This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, horse people. This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to the Horses in the Morning show on the Horse Radio Network for Thursday, October 11th, 2012, episode 507. Horses in the Morning is live Monday and Wednesday and Friday, so today we bring you a highlight podcast from the Horse Radio Network. Sit back and enjoy episode 216 of the Eventing Radio Show as Samantha Clark and John Kyle welcome guests Carol G., Carol Mortimer, and Kitty King to talk about the future of future event horses. What will their breeding be? Where will they come from? And how will we manage their early careers? Horses in the Morning will be back live tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern when Darlie Newman, host of the Emmy Award-winning TV show Equitrekking, who will join Glenn the Geek for a rollicking romp around the best ranch riding spots in the American West. And on this day in 1975, the father of international show jumper Jessica Springsteen scored his first chart-topping hit, Born to Run. In case you haven't guessed, that would be Bruce Springsteen. Jessica's proud papa to this day is often seen cheering Jessica on at competitions around the world. Good job, Dad.
Welcome to the Eventing Radio Show. I'm Samantha Clark in Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm John Kyle in London, England. Hello.
Hello. Welcome back, John. How have you been?
I'm all right. I see that my normal bit has been taken off the notes. I had to fill it in myself in my mind. It just says, and I'm.
You're so unreliable. Where have you been since? It's been 2 weeks and I imagine you've been to... Have I spoken to you since Osberton or where have you been?
All over. I didn't go up to Osberton. I was at South of England International, which is run by Pippa Funnel's mum. That was 2 weekends ago. And I freely admit I was supposed to be, I was all booked in to come and speak to you last week. And I was out having dinner with Pippa and she said, so how did recording the show go today? And my face just dropped. I completely forgot because you organized it with me too far in advance.
Fine friend you are. Well, actually, I had a lovely time with Jess Montgomery, so don't worry, you can stand me up anytime. We have a great show both this week and next week. So we're talking about where you should find your new event horse. Should you breed it? Should you buy it? Who you should talk to? What you should look for? What you should not look for? And we've talked to some of the sort of premier experts in the field. I'm really excited to share all this with everyone. And this is the first part. We've got Carol G, who founded the Fernhill Dynasty, and we've got Carol Mortimer.
Absolutely. I mean, Carol's a very well-respected equestrian journalist and just has either the most encyclopedic knowledge or never puts pen to paper or word to microphone without masses of research behind her on bloodlines in all of the sport horse disciplines. But eventing is her sport as well. So she's got a real personal interest in how the breeding and production of young horses in eventing is going and developing.
And then to get a rider's perspective, we're going to talk briefly to Kitty King, who I visited in the summer at her yard. She seems to be winning everything. I mean, absolutely unbeatable. And one of the horses that I saw her jump and school that day was a five-year-old she had, and she still had a leg for sale. And I remember thinking, gosh, she is rather nice. And maybe that would be a good investment. Never mind the two children's school fees. Maybe I should buy a leg of a five-year-old. That's exactly what I need. And I thought, gosh, you know, he is nice. And then he went, I think the next week Kitty texted me and said he'd done very well. She said, oh, that five-year-old, you like just won an event. So I thought, gosh, I do have a good eye. It seems I'm not alone at all. And it was so glaringly obvious what a nice horse is. He's gone on and won the five-year-old Burley Young Event Horse Championship this year, the five-year-old young horse championship at Osberton. Is that what it is? And true to form with Kitty is winning everything. So we're going to talk to her a little bit about him and a little bit about what she looks for and what she likes to ride. And the strange, not the strange thing, but she's also had a very successful season or two on Zidanti, her little black mare. who couldn't be more different to this five-year-old. This five-year-old is long and tall and leggy. He's sort of angular and big. So it's not like she has a specific type. So I'm interested to talk to her about that too.
Well, the Fernhill horses are just an absolute phenomenon. When you think of them standing with Mary, for instance, when she did her top two at Rolex, at every championship from one star up to Olympic Games, you'll find a Fernhill horse amongst them, or one that's been through Carol G's yard. Tell us a little bit more about that, Samantha.
Let's let Carol talk to you. I had a long chat with Carol, and I could have talked. I don't know if it's the Irish thing that I could have talked to her for hours, or just because she is completely fascinating and so many wonderful stories to tell. So we'll listen to that. Well, Carol, thank you so much for joining us. And I actually recently it could have been any event. You could pick any event, probably anywhere in the world. And the Fernhill prefix is sort of, it's ubiquitous now, and you must be so proud. Tell us a little bit, if you don't mind, how it started.
Well, firstly, yeah, of course, obviously, I'm very proud that the name has now become a household name, particularly in the States, where I do the majority of my business, but also in several other countries around Europe as well as at home here in Ireland. How did we get started with Fernhill? Well, I was in partnership with another guy in Ireland for a lot of years, for 15 years, and we decided we'd go our separate ways. And so I moved to Kilkenny, where I'm living now, and established Fernhill, and that was 10 years ago now. And the rest, as you say, is history, really. I came here with just a few horses and built up the string. And competed and sold the horses to try and make the Fernhill name, as it is now, a household name, really.
And I think it's a misconception which people are beginning to realise. You're not a breeder, you're a producer and you source horses, but the Fernhill, you don't breed the Fernhill horses.
No, some horses I do breed. Yeah, I have bred a few, but mainly I would source them as young horses, try and buy 3 or 4 years old horses, and produce them. Sometimes I would buy older from and give them a career change. I would buy a good few horses out of the show jumping row and then give them a career change to eventing. I think it's a great source for me, the show jumpers, because they tend to have their horses riding very well. I think it's great that the horses learn to leave up the coloured poles, especially in today's eventing that it's become so important. One pole can drop you a lot of places at a 3-day event. So, I tend to source 3-4-year-olds and then a little bit older from the show jumping field.
And I've seen fun, you know, Philip Dutton has a lot. There's horses eventing, you know, at every single level, up to the Olympics and badminton. And what do you look for? What are your pointers? What do you avoid? But what especially do you like?
Well, I think, like everybody looking to buy an event horse, I look for the normal uphill conformation, a good mover, a good jumper, got to be quick and sharp in front, and plenty of blood in their page, in their breeding. You know, I think we still want plenty of blood, even with the modern day short format eventing. But the particular things that I look for, I look for a horse with a good temperament and a good attitude to his work, because not every horse is going to make a 4-star horse, and not all of my clients are Philip Dutton and then Olympic riders. I would sell a lot of horses to the amateur and low level market, juniors and young riders. So I think that a horse with a good temperament, as well as the normal qualities that you're looking for in an event horse, good temperament, a good attitude to his work, is always very saleable.
Yeah.
I do obviously particularly like the Irish horse and try to source and sell as many Irish horses as possible, because the Irish horse do tend to be, well, we're the top in the world for event horses and have been for a long time. Maybe it slipped a little bit over the last couple of years, but we'll be back there. We do definitely breed the best event horses in the world. And I think they're very tough, very sound, and have great temperaments. Those are the qualities that the Irish horse have naturally. All that said, I do still source horses around the rest of Europe, and I'm not against the continental horses. I tend to sell more Irish horses because I would know them well. I know the bloodlines, I know the breeds, I know temperaments, and so I find it easier to place them when I sell them, when I know the background very well. But like I say, I have bought horses with continental bloodlines. I've bought horses elsewhere in Europe and on the continent. For example, Fernie Lurko, indeed, he was bred in Portugal. His father was a German horse, a German show jumping horse. So I've had great success with the continental bred horses too.
Yeah, and of course we saw Fernie Lurko when he came over here to Lexington and did second at Rolex.
Yeah, that was a super result. Now, only for a couple of time penalties, he would have won, really. So, and he was a young horse, so it was a great result.
And you're a rider yourself, and you still, you know, do you mainly concentrate on the young horses now and just producing them, or do you still have upper-level aspirations to go back and do it all over?
No, I think I've kind of been there and done it all, really, and, you know, you're getting on a bit and things ache and you know, you're not as quick and as sharp as I used to be when I was younger. I think with my riding, I think I can be honest, say that. And the business takes a lot of my time, you know, a lot of time sourcing horses, travelling, looking for horses. And so you're not able to concentrate as much on the riding, which you need to do to compete at the upper levels. So I still complete, you know, do the one-star events. I would do a lot with the pre-novice horses. And I like to still keep competing, mainly because I enjoy it, and also to try and keep me fit and keep everything active. I think riding's a great sport for at any level for anybody. So for that reason, yes, I do keep riding and I do keep competing. I'm quite competitive, so whatever I like to do, I like to be competitive at and do well. And I honestly think with the time restraints on me at the moment, I could not be competitive and do well at three-star level. So I moved down the grades so that I can still remain competitive and enjoy it.
Yeah. How big an operation is Fernhill, and how many horses would you ever have there at once? And do you have a slow time during the winter, or do you keep going all year round? And a little, tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Well, our sort of buzz number, our key number is 40 horses. So we normally have around 40, give or take five horses, depending on horses sold, waiting to be shipped, horses that we've, you know, that I've spotted and bought that, you know, perhaps bring us over our key number. But 40 is what we aim to have here.
Wow.
And those would be anything from 3-year-olds upwards. Mainly 4-year-old plus we would have here. And there are anything between a pre-novice, nice pre-novice horse up to, we've got a couple of 3-star horses there in the barn at the moment. So we do have all kinds of everything. Like I said, not every horse is a 4-star horse. So we have a few for the junior market. We would always have a good selection of horses for the amateur market. And when I say the amateur market, I don't just mean your basic one-star or training-level horse. You know, we would have horses that would be competitive at 2- and 3-star, but easy enough to be ridden by somebody that holds down a full-time job. For example, Kevin Keane, your vet over there, he bought Fernhill Flutter.
I love both of them.
Yeah, he's fantastic, and he's been placed at 3-star level and done very well. But I would class that horse as an amateur horse because Kevin can ride him in between his veterinary career. It can pick him up and put him down, and an ideal horse for that situation.
Well, where did you spot Fernhill Flutter, and how did you know all those things? Did you realise that over time as you were producing him, or did you sort of spot that immediately? How does that happen?
A little bit of both, really. I knew the horse, friends of mine bred him. He was bred not a million miles from where I live. He's by a horse called Puissons that would not have the best reputation for being easy horses. So on his passport, if you pick it up and look at it, you probably wouldn't pick him out to do the job that he is doing at the moment for Kevin. But I followed the horse from being a just broken 4-year-old. He competed in the Dublin Horse Show in the Future Event Horse Finals as a 4- and a 5-year-old. Displayed a fantastic temperament. They've got to have a very good temperament for that show environment. And then I bought him as a 5-year-old. Produced him a little bit. I sold him to a friend of mine who rode him up to 1-star level. decided he didn't suit her, just wasn't really, they didn't gel, they didn't get on. So I bought the horse back again from her, as I often do. I don't like my horses to be resold. If I like to try and take them back and place them. I think that's a key thing in the horse, in selling a horse, is selling it to the right person. And if I make a mistake and it goes wrong, I like to be the one that sorts it out. So we bought him back again, did a couple of competitions. And when Philip rang me and said he needed a horse for his vet, a very special horse for a very special person, and I wasn't to get it wrong. Obviously, there was no pressure, Carol, but don't get this one wrong. I just, when Kevin came over, he actually came over to ride a completely different horse. When he arrived, I realised that the horse that I'd selected for him was not the horse at all. The minute I saw him ride, I knew. I said, this is your horse, Kevin. This is the horse that you're going to gel with. This is the one that you're going to get on with. And sure enough, he rode him, loved him, and the rest is history.
Yeah, fairy tale ending. What about some other? Can you pick out favourites, or you can't really tell me that? Do you have to be a bit diplomatic?
Lots of favourites. I mean, obviously, Fernhill Urquhart would be a great favourite. We evented him here up to three-star level. In fact, he won a three-star with us here before he went to Mary. And he's a pet, he's a character, and he was definitely a favourite. Mary bought another horse then from me the following year, a young horse, which actually she's going to Leon Donger, the World Breeding Championships, with in a couple of weeks' time. She calls him Cavalier Venture. He was another one that I had picked out, and I thought he was going to be a top horse, and I thought he was very much a Mary horse. So he was a yard favourite. We liked him a lot.
Can people, people can change their names and take out the Fernhill prefix?
Well, Mary's owners particularly wanted it. The same owners that had her Cavalier horses, and she particularly wanted to call him a Cavalier. So I don't mind. I know the horse. Most people know the horse came from me. Because it's with Mary, I can follow him easily. I mean, I think one of the reasons where the prefix is very useful is I can follow the horses. Yeah. I can just Google Fernhill and up the results from last week and come. I can see how my horses are getting on, either working out for people. So that's one advantage of it. The horse of Mary's is called Cavalier Venture, and I can follow him easily, and he's doing very well. So I'm happy with that.
Speaking about that, is Phillips Mighty Nice? Was he from you?
Yes, he was. Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
I love
yeah.
That horse is beautiful,
and there is a bit of a story goes with him, because I spotted that horse originally as a 4-year-old. He was show jumping with a friend of mine, show jumping, and then his owner decided to give him a career change to eventing. And I tried to buy him at 4. I tried to buy him at 5, and no. They had the heart set on going to Leon Donger, the World Breeding Championships. And Philip kept asking me for young horses. And I kept saying, I have something picked out for you, just have to wait. And then they had this thing. They wanted to go to Lyon. So the minute the horse showed jumped in Lyon, I was like, oh, this is my horse. We want the horse. And called up Philip, of course, and said, right, now's the time. On a plane, come and buy the horse. And he literally flew in, I think it was, the next week after Lyon. And sure enough, the horse was perfect for him, and he loves the horse, and he's getting on great with him. Say he's one of his definite up and coming top horses.
He's lovely. And how can you not love a horse who's called Happy in the stables?
What a great name, isn't it? I mean, Philip is great at naming them. He doesn't call them all Fernhill, but the same with Atlas, the horse he has now, which I think he's just moving up to 3-star.
He's coming to Buccleuch.
He thinks a lot of that horse, but yeah, he's going to Buccleuch. That's right. So he's not called Fernhill, but we all know where he came from, and sometimes the owners want to pick their own name, and that's fine too. Sometimes to have a barn full of horses all called Fernhill is maybe not acceptable to when you've got a group of different owners, so
Well, this has been so interesting. Thank you so much, Carol, for talking to us. And
you'll be well
represented at Lyon and at Buccleuch then.
Yeah, it's great. I'm hoping to go up to Buccleuch for the weekend just to meet Philip and his owner and see the horse. And then I've flights booked to Lyon as well, just to go for the weekend. I mean, that's quite an important part of my business, is following the horses I've sold. And also at those events, I can spot other horses. We might have 40 horses here in Fernhill, but it's not always enough to satisfy the people looking for a horse. So I do a little bit of sourcing horses as well for people that are already up and doing a job not particularly in our yard, so it's quite useful for that sort of thing to go to these events as well.
It sounds rather like fun, although I know from experience what sounds like fun is often hard work too. So,
well, it's a lot of work in looking at the horses and study. And obviously, if you're recommending a horse that you don't have yourself and you have in the barn, it's more important to get it right. You've got to study them more carefully. So, you know, often it would take two or three trips to see a horse run and see how he behaves before you can recommend him to somebody. So, you know, the ideal scenario is selling a horse here from Fernhill of my own, really.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very important part of the horse dealing, the horse trading business, is selling a horse is easy, Samantha. Don't let anybody tell you it's very easy. The tricky part, the skillful part, is selling the right horse to the right person. And that's the skillful part. And I think that's why so many of the Fernhill... Well, I think that's why so many of the Fernhill horses are successful. Yeah, because I think that we have a good name and the horses are successful because we match them with the right people. We don't just sell them to the first person that comes along. We try and know the horses well, know the riders well and the owner that we're selling them to and place them accordingly. And I think that's a skill.
Yeah.
You know, it's something you learn over the years.
Well, thank you very, very much again. And
you're very welcome.
I hope you get to enjoy yourself as well as work a little bit at Lyon and Bruxelles.
Oh, I do, yes. Yeah, I'm sure I will, yeah.
We'll keep in touch and thank you very much.
Okay. Carol. Thank you, Samantha. Thanks for your time.
Hi, Glenn here with the Horse Radio Network, and I'm back with Cassie from Bitter Britain with Bitter Britain's Product of the Week.
Well, today, Glenn, we're going to talk about a great little item called the Fresh Helmet Sack. As the name implies, the fresh helmet sack keeps your riding helmet fresh and dry after each ride. No matter what the temperature, we all know that riders sweat, especially in our helmets, even with all the great venting technology in most of today's models. I really hate that feeling of putting my helmet on and having it still damp from yesterday's ride.
Yeah.
With the fresh helmet sack, you just toss it in your helmet after each ride, and the sack soaks up moisture and neutralizes unpleasant odors, so your helmet's ready to go the next time you ride. To recharge the sack, you can just leave it out in the sun for a few hours or even just put it on the dash of your car while you ride. I definitely have more than one use for these. They're great not only at the barn, but for home use like your gym bag, closets, or other storage areas. Bitter Britain also carries a fresh boot sack that's made for your tall boots, so that you can use them in your show boots, wellies, and your cross-country walk boots that always get soaked while you're trying to figure out your course. So there's definitely a couple options here, and plan to use these around the house as well.
And that's the Fresh Helmet Sack and the Fresh Boots Sack, and that's S-A-C-K. You can find them at bitterbritain.com. Just search for Helmet Sack or Boot Sack, and you'll find them there. And, Cassie, you have a tent sale coming up, don't you? The annual Bitter Britain tent sale that everybody looks forward to?
Yes, of course. We do have that coming up, Glenn, and that is going to be October 25th, 26th, and 27th at the store in Oxford, Pennsylvania from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. So come on out. Shop early, shop often. We have drawings for shopping sprees all 3 days, two each day, and for $250 each, and then one for $500 on Saturday, last of the day. So stop on by.
Very good. And, of course, you can find all the details about that at bitterbritain.com.
Well, many thanks to Carol and to Bit of Britain, of course. And, John, you caught up with Carol Mortimer, who was doing the circuits and looking at the young horses at Osberton. Tell us a little bit more about that class, if you don't mind. That's something new to me.
Well, it's the British Eventing Young Horse Championship. So it's actually the national governing body getting involved, and they've awarded a contract to a horse trials in this case, Osberton, to deliver the young horse events. And they run a 7-year-old and a 6-year-old, and Carol explains, but the 7-year-old runs CCI 2-star, the 6-year-old CIC 1-star, and the 5 and 4-year-olds at the appropriate 1-day national level for them. So the horses not only have to be good in their sphere, but the 6 and 7-year-olds also have to have the international minimum eligibility requirement to compete at those levels as well. So you've got lots of really lovely horses there alongside a normal 3-day event as well. And Carol and I discussed that quite a bit, but I started off by asking Carol about where she thought bloodlines in eventing were going today.
Actually, I haven't got a clue where bloodlines are going in eventing. If you actually look at the young horse classes, you will find whatever you want. So, and it's actually very difficult to get a handle on what necessarily is going to come through, certainly looking at that level. Looking at the older classes or the bigger classes tends to give you a different picture again. It is actually quite difficult if you're actually trying to assess breeding from looking at the Young Horse Championships.
Well, I find that really interesting, Carol, because, I mean, I'm coming from the background of Ireland where, you know, we love a master impulse, we love a cruising horse. We saw when the short format came in, you know, the real rise of the warm blood. And at the Olympics then, as well as so many traditionally bred horses, we had, I think in the eventing, I think we had one by Jazz and another one by Kevin Zed, a really strong dressage and show jumping sire, respectively.
Yes, there are all sorts coming through, but I have to say that, in my opinion, I think if you want something for the top level, in my opinion, you can't get away from a blood horse. And I would be looking for something, I personally would always be looking for something at least half-bred, preferably three-quarter bred. Yes, with something else to give it maybe a bit of lift and a bit of jump. And maybe a little bit of an advantage in the dressage. Then at the lower levels, I think actually a well-produced horse, the breeding isn't so important. And you can get away with all sorts of horses at those lower levels. But I think once we get to two-star level, and if you're looking for a long-term prospect, then in my opinion, the blood horse still rules. I think Burley is a great teller of that one, and certainly also if an event in the going gets tough, that's when the thoroughbred blood comes through. Longer distances or a bit of mud is thrown at them. They're the ones that dig a bit deeper and come up with the goods.
Well, Burley is a nice little segue there, because one of the things I wanted to sort of pick your brains a little bit about is the Burley Young Event Horse Series, which has been enormously successful. I think it's over 20 years it's been going now. What sort of horses have come out of that, and is it a real good preparation? Are you definitely going to find an eventer out of it? And is it, if you wanted to try and buy a horse from it, is it towards the top end of the market?
I think when you go to buy an event horse, if you're looking at those young horse classes, I think you actually have to have in mind the preferences sort of horse that you want. I think most riders, if they're experienced riders, have an idea of the type of horse that they would like, and you might or might not find them in the young event horse classes. I think the young event horse class is an extremely popular class, and it's a great way to produce a class. Whether or not you're going to find a future four-star event horse there is another matter entirely. And I would say that the four-star eventer might not necessarily be the one that's in the top 10 in those classes, because there is undoubtedly, since in the last 10 years, since the rise of the horses with more warm blood breeding, they do have an advantage in those classes. Although, in fairness to Burley, they have changed the classes to encompass some cross-country fences now, and I know the judges are much happier to be able to see horses galloping over cross-country fences rather than just being assessed over show jumps. And they have again this year brought in and marked so that the type can be assessed, which gives the judge a bit more of a, you know, so that they can actually look for a preference of a type that they think are going to make a four-star horse.
Then in Britain, we go on and we've got some young horse classes. I mean, I'm thinking of the 8 and 9 year old three-star at Blenheim, and of course the young horse championships that you've just been to at Osberton in the Midlands. Do we have enough of them?
Oh, I think there's enough young horse classes. I think actually it's about right. You know, we've got the young horse class at Burley, which gives Burley another edge and a lot of interest. The young horse classes at Osberton are a great end to the year. And then it's lovely that there is the 8, 9 year old championship, which actually by that time, you know, does start to narrow the field down a bit more. And hopefully you might be able to see horses that are going to go on there. But I think, you know, it does all depend on, we've always got to remember when you're looking at these classes, if you're looking at them for a prospective horse, what it is you're looking for, because not everybody is looking for a four-star eventer. In fact, we've always got to remember that actually only 10% of horses that start at novice ever go advanced. So, you know, there are an awful lot of horses that will stay at those lower levels.
The French sort of season of this is about to really kick off with Linière, and of course the people from Linière bred a recent Lyon winner, Lord de Linière. Lyon, of course, the World Young Horse Championships. You know, are there any trends there? I mean, what countries and what stud books are doing well in these sort of classes at the moment?
I mean, I have to say it's quite interesting, certainly in ours, is that the Dutch horses do very well. And, you know, they're not being specifically bred by cross-country. You know, the Dutch are not great cross-country riders themselves and have specialised in breeding dressage and jumping horses. And yet our riders seem to like the Dutch horses, and they do very well in our young horse classes. Anything with a bit of Holstein is also doing quite well, more on the continent, I would have to say, although people over here are actually beginning to appreciate a bit of Holstein jump. And, of course, that came through in Ireland, as obviously Cavalier was a great trailblazer for the Holstein blood. And I think there's actually a big resurgence, actually, of the Irish horses are actually, again, in our young horse classes, an awful lot of Irish horses. Although Irish sport horse breeding now encompasses a huge range of types and bloodlines, from thoroughbreds. In fact, we had a thoroughbred winner in the seven-year-old class this year, but the second-place horse was actually jumping bred, again bred in Ireland, but from continental bloodlines. So although they're both Irish, very different types indeed.
So tell me about Osberton then, Carol. It is a normal three-day event, but then the Young Horse Championships from, is it 4 years old upwards, run alongside in a variety of different formats?
Yeah, the 4 and 5 year olds do a standard one day event, which actually does take place on one day for most of them. So they are doing dressage, show jumping, and a cross country that is suitable for their level, which, you know, at 4 years old is a basic cross country within a field. It's usually the show jumping that is the most influential phase for these age groups, particularly 4 year olds who can find coming to somewhere like Osberton a little bit daunting. The 6 year old is actually run as a CIC one star, and then the 7 year old is actually run as a two star CCI.
Okay, you mentioned our seven-year-old winner, and I think I also read that somebody has done the double of a Burley win and a Young Horse Championships win at Osberton this year.
Yes, Tom McEwen won the seven-year-old championships, which actually was won 2 years ago by Borough Pennies, who actually then went to the Olympics this year, who's the one by Kevin. So that's quite interesting that she, just 2 years ago, won this seven-year-old championship. And this year it was won by the thoroughbred that Tom rode. And so that might be an interesting one for the future. As I know, Tom, who's actually been around Burley on thoroughbred, is a great fan of the thoroughbred, and he thinks a lot of that horse. At the other end, we had Kitty King. She won the five-year-old class here with a Dutch-bred horse, with which she did win Burley. So, yes, he's proved himself. He's a very tidy horse, and she thinks very highly of him.
Now, young Sophie Howe, who won the individual gold at the juniors, her brother Tom was riding a horse that also won at Osberton.
Yep, and he won here. He's actually also won here last year, so he's followed up his five-year-old win with a win in the six-year-old CIC, again with another Dutch-bred horse, although it actually has some, I think it's got some Saint-François breeding in there. It's not totally Dutch bloodlines. But yes, he's done that, and he thinks very highly of that horse as well.
And is that the form? Do quality horses, you know, if they're real good quality at four-year-old, will they carry on sort of winning at those classes, being well-placed?
In my opinion, not necessarily so. I personally wouldn't. If I wanted a long-term horse, I would always look at bloodlines first. Not everybody does, so I'm probably not the normal person. But in my opinion, I mean, apart from the fact, obviously, that there is, of course, the fact that a horse has to be produced properly to reach those levels. And there is undoubtedly a big say in that, to be honest. That does count for a lot. Certain riders can get most horses up to four-star level, whatever they're breeding. And therefore, sometimes you would think that breeding is irrespective, and it is difficult to say which is actually most important. But obviously not all of these horses are going to go to four-star level. But I think a lot of them are going to have quite good careers at the lower levels, and which I think is what most horses will be competing at.
And some of our riders that are familiar to us from their four-star rides as well, but they do make a real speciality of producing lovely young horses. I'm thinking in particular of Sarah Cohen, perhaps, and J.P. Sheffield. I mean, you always see them in the ribbons in these young horse classes.
Well, undoubtedly, there are riders who do like producing young horses. There are also riders who you will never see in a young horse class. I don't think I've ever seen Andrew Nicholson in a young horse class, for example. But some people enjoy them and some people don't. Other people enjoy riding older horses. But that's all part of the fascination, isn't it? Watching these older, experienced riders bring on the horses and then following them through.
Well, Carol, I mean, you are and have been an eventing owner as well, so I think those that were interested enough could find out your preferences and bloodlines. But maybe you could tell us a couple of horses that really caught your attention at Osberton.
Well, obviously, being a bit of a fan of Thoroughbred Blood, one would have to put one's money on Tom McKeown going on with his Thoroughbred, Rehe USA, who's got interesting bloodlines and goes back to Warcraft, and that's sort of quite interesting one. So I think he could be one that we would see at Burley. There were some also, I also try to be a fan and support British breeding. And there were several nice horses by Jumbo, of course, who carries on producing good horses, providing, in my opinion, that he's got a nice thoroughbred mare behind him. I saw a couple of those that I would like to see going on to four-star. Another one I think would be interesting to see how it goes on is the one that was third in the 7-year-old, which actually has got Anglo-Arab bloodlines, although it was bred in Ireland, which is something I think that we tend in this country to overlook, although the French are a great fan of Anglo-Arab blood. So it would be very nice to see a horse, that one, going through. And I've been particularly keen to actually see a little, there is an Anglo-Arab stallion in this country that's been eventing very well this year. Little Persiflage, and I would love to see more people use his bloodlines, because I think, you know, they have a lot to offer, but we all seem a little reluctant to use them. So anyway, so I think Coldplay would be an interesting one to be watching. 4-year-olds are always very difficult. 4 and 5-year-olds are always terribly difficult to actually predict what's going to happen there. But obviously, what was interesting in that class was that Lucinda Fredericks had the two embryo transfers from Hedley Britannia there, both of whom are by Jaguar Male. And they both finished on their dressage score. One's a stallion, one's a mare. So that would actually be very interesting to see how both of those cope with the future.
Carol, that's been a fantastic gallop through sort of the young horse scene and what people might consider looking at if they came over, particularly into our British Isles, to look for eventers. So thank you very, very much indeed.
Do you have a company in the horse world? Are you looking to get the word out about your products, services, or shows? At the Horse Radio Network, we understand our advertisers need to reach the equestrian consumer in the most efficient, cost-effective way possible. Internet radio shows like this one, also called podcasts, allow the flexibility and creativity to craft unique messages that stand out from the herd and reinforce your existing marketing and social media strategies. If you want to learn more about advertising on this show or any of our shows on the Horse Radio Network, contact our account manager, Lisa, at 847-790-4476. That's Lisa at 847-970-4476, or you can drop her an email at lisa@horseradionetwork.com. Our listeners are terrific, engaged, and avid horse people, the ones that you are looking for.
Well, thanks, John. That was fascinating. And I mean, and actually that's something that Michael Pollard talked about in his, he wrote a blog for Chronicle of the Horse, and he talked about how the states could do a better job of bringing more young event horse classes and incorporating them into events in the United States, which I think would be a good way forward, and but to make them more cohesive too.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I was surprised that Carol said that she felt we had enough young horse classes, and she would certainly have a better handle on that than I. But when you look at the amount, perhaps, of them that there are in France or Germany, with the performance sales coupled into them as well, I know Ireland has a couple of performance sales coming up that I'm hopefully going to speak to a guest about for next week's show. But they seem to homogenize it a lot more on the continent, and you've got an entire solution from looking at a 4 or 5 year old maybe at the Le Lion sale alongside 6 or 7 year old horses in their world championships, and you know, you can buy the younger horses, you can obviously buy them if they're for sale out of the big competition as well, and that sort of performance breeding as well just seems to be a little bit more on the forward foot on the continent. But it does nobody any harm to really focus in on producing and rewarding quality young horses.
Yeah, I agree. It's a great showcase. So, Kitty, Sea Law Land, obviously, was that a surprise how well he's done this year?
It's always a surprise with horses because you never know how they're going to turn out and go. But I was very hopeful when we found him as a four-year-old that he would have, you know, a successful five-year-old season, because he was just such a smart young horse, and he seemed to have all the attributes to make a good event horse. He was a good mover, he had a good brain, and he had a nice, careful, scopey jump. So I did hope that he would have a successful season like he has had, but you can never tell with horses. So it was lovely that he did fulfill all my expectations.
John and I were talking at the beginning of the show, and I was saying how I'd seen him in the summer and loved him, but he's very different to Zidanti. All of your horses are very different, but they obviously all have sort of one common denominator, is that they're all winning. What do you look for? And you told me that you and your mother had almost bought him by accident.
Yeah, he was bigger than what I would normally choose to, buy. Obviously, if people send big horses, I'm more than happy to ride them, but if I'm buying one, I would normally try and buy something that was a little bit more my size. But he was just such a nice quality horse, and to be honest, I just wanted to ride it, and produce a nice horse that looked like it got a great future ahead of it, because it got the paces, it got the jump, and it seemed to have the right brain and temperament. And, that's the main thing that I look in for a young horse. I just look for something that's got the natural kind of ability in the jumping and on the flat and the brain, so they're trainable, so you can produce them. Because trying to produce a really talented horse that can move and jump but has no brain, you may as well just have an average Joe that's trainable, because they'll probably end up getting further, to be honest. But luckily this one does seem to have everything.
Yeah. And you'd actually said as well that Zidanti reminds you a little bit of your first, one of your first great horses, Five Boys, because of her attitude.
Yeah, she just loves the job and loves going out competing and loves learning, and just is one of those horses that just seems to really enjoy life, which makes working with her just, so easy and a real pleasure, because she's wanting to do it as much as you are, which is lovely.
So Sea Law Land has now won the 5-year-old Burley Young Event Horse Championships and the 5-year-old Young Horse Championships in Osberton, and you're heading to Lyon d'Angers now.
He's having a break now. He's done all his little bits and pieces for this season, so he's going to have a short break. And then I've got Persimmon going to Le Lyon to do the 7-year-old championships in a couple of weeks' time.
And did he win the 6-year-old last year?
No, he won the 6-year-old national class. So the equivalent to what Sea Law Land won this year as a 5-year-old, but he won the 6-year-old equivalent last year. And then he did go to Le Lyon last season, but it was his first season's eventing, and the crowds just got to him a little bit in the show jumping, and he had a very characteristic round and had three down, which he hadn't had that many down all year put together. But he just, the crowds just kind of got to him a little bit, and he just got a bit tight and had back rails down when he jumped towards the crowds because he just had them behind, which was a real shame. But hopefully he'll have learned a lot from that experience, and you know, hopefully he'll put up a good performance when we go out there in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it was Zidanti who won the 7-year-olds there, was it?
Yeah, she won the 7-year-olds last year. So whether we can pull that off again and win it for the second year running, I'm not sure, but it would be nice to try.
Well, you're on top form. How important do you think these young horse classes and breeding championships and things are for your horses and for you? Because I know you ride mostly for owners. Do they like it?
The owners really enjoy it because it gives the young horses an aim for the end of the season. It's always nice to finish on, you know, like with the older horses, you're normally finishing with a big 3-day and things like that. So it's nice to have a class that is the young horses, you know, big aim for the year and for the owners to finish on. You know, and they are great classes, but I do think you have to have the right horse, in that, you know, you wouldn't want to kind of have a nice young horse but it's perhaps a little bit more, you know, mentally fragile or a bit weaker, because you wouldn't want to have to, you know, you wouldn't want to rush them and make the class be all and end all. But if you've got the horse that's in the right kind of physical state, they're lovely, you know, they are a lovely class to, you know, to have a crack at.
Well, best of luck in France, and well done this year, and a cracking year. And we might call you up in the winter and ask you for some tips on producing young horses. So obviously know what you're doing. Thank you so much, Kitty.
No, that's right. Thank you very much.
John, you've got a busy, busy fall season coming up, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Like, the summer is my break. Well, it especially was this year with them all being rained off anyway. But, yeah, two of the 4-star classic events are still to come this season, and I'm lucky enough to be going to both of them. I'm going to Pau and Adelaide to do a little bit of tubby talking. And in about 4 weeks' time, the World Cup Dressage Series starts again, and I go to Odense in Denmark to start that off.
Very exciting. I'm so jealous of Pau and Adelaide, neither of which I've been to yet.
Well, I know all about the foie gras at Pau. I'm looking forward to Adelaide. It'll be my first visit out there. But I've known Gillian Rolton, who's the director there, for a long time. We had her up judging at Punchestown a few years ago when she was starting her judging days at the end of a very successful eventing career. And, of course, she's just been on the grand jury for the Olympic Games. So, you know, I feel part of that.
Okay, well, this week I have my of the week has turned into a triple whammy, really. It's Desert Island Discs, which I love, and I can still get over here in the States as a podcast, and I highly recommend that. And this week especially, I really enjoyed it. It was Adepitan, who is a Paralympian athlete, and then I think he was on the Channel 4 coverage of the Paralympics with Claire Balding, but I didn't get to see that.
He was.
And then it became especially poignant this week because over the weekend, the US para-equestrian Jonathan Wentz sadly passed away. And we got to know him at the Horse Radio Network when Glenn and I did the 2010 WEG show. And, of course, he was the most successful US para-rider at this year's London Olympic Games. So our thoughts and prayers go to his family and friends. And that's my of the week. Although I have a slightly on a lighter note, I also just received in the post today from my mum. So thank you, Mum, for sending me Claire Balding's book, My Animals and Other Family. And I've been stroking the cover. It's so beautiful. I can't wait to read it. I can't wait to start. Do you have anything, John, or is that it for this week? I'll do my two for both of us.
Well, the Bullens, the family of Jenny Laurison Clark, Mike Bullen, Jane Holderness Rodham. Their mum was a very celebrated artist, and she's having an exhibition of her works at the moment in London, and some of them have sold very, very well. But as a result of the various receptions there, I have produced... you can have that as your exhibition of the week if you'd like. But a story of the week. Apparently, at one stage in the many Bullens children's... upbringing, a horse or a pony was caught halfway down a cliff, about 10 foot down of a 20 foot cliff, and Jane Holderness Rodham, climbed down, got on the pony, and it was trapped. And all she could do was convince it to jump the next 10 foot down the cliff into the sea, when it could then be swum around to the nearby cove and rescued. This she managed to do. So that is my story of the week about a true legend of our sport.
Wow, that's a fantastic story. That trumps everything. Well, that's brilliant. How on earth, where did you hear that?
It came back from the press night at the exhibition. I didn't tackle her about it when I saw her at South of England International. What I did get to do at South of England International was have a play with her Olympic torch, which she brought for everyone to get their grubby fingers on.
That doesn't surprise me at all, John and the lightsaber. Well, thank you very much to all our guests this week, to Carol G, Carol Mortimer and Kitty King. And please visit our homepage, where we'll put links to all their websites and social media pages. You can subscribe to the Eventing Radio Show via iTunes to make sure you don't miss a single episode. And please check out our Facebook page too. Just look for the Eventing Radio Show. You can follow me on Twitter at Samantha L. Clark, and you can follow John at John Kyle Speaks. And you can follow the Horse Radio Network at Horse Radio. If you prefer, please feel free to contact me by emailing me at samantha@horseradionetwork.com or john@horseradionetwork.com. Please support Bit of Britain at bitofbritain.com and Draper Therapies at drapertherapies.com. Have a great week, enjoy your eventing, and thank you for listening.
Hey, Coach Jen here, listeners. Couldn't resist putting these bloopers at the end of the show. It's not too often we get those from John and Samantha.
This is episode... Good grief.
You sound a bit happier, could you?
I was like, I think I'm about to die.
And you can follow eventing... what can you follow? Horse Radio? What is it?
Yeah, it's at Horse Radio.
And you can follow... I'll edit it.